Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Today I'm sitting down and having a chat with David Long, who is a senior lecturer over at USQ here in Queensland and a paramedic. And we're going to have a chat today about something that he's quite passionate about and researches quite a bit, which is community paramedicine. So we're going to have a chat about what the future sort of looks like for paramedicine, considering that we're all just starting out in the profession. So thanks for coming along today, David. And would you like to introduce yourself a little bit?
Yeah, g'day, Alex. G'day, everyone. Thanks. Thanks very much for bringing me along. So, where to begin? I suppose I started my career in paramedicine, I'm going to say late last century. Does that make me sound even older now? Do I have to give a date?
You don't have to give a date. That's okay.
Let's just say a little while now, obviously the years go by pretty fast. So I was a New South Wales ambulance paramedic, ambulance officer actually back in the day. I cut my teeth in southwest Sydney, so great place to grow up as a young tadpole paramedic, I guess. And I went on and I did intensive care, but then I did extended care as the first course of extended care paramedics that went through in 2007. It's going to be a segue into kind of that community paramedicine side, but really enjoyable to jump in a new paradigm of care. Put along, and as a lot of academics do, accidentally fell into academia did a PhD in 2017 and find myself over at USQ.
Very cool. And so I guess that's a nice segue, but what is, for our listeners that don't know it, is that extended care role that you ended up doing?
Oh, look, it's actually quite difficult to define, Alex. So I suppose when we're looking at extended care, it's really looking at other options for the patient other than the emergency department, essentially. So we're looking at options within the primary healthcare sector or to other allied health professionals where you can treat and, in fact, potentially discharge a patient from care without going to the emergency department. But I've got to say, when you are working in this space, though, it's really, at the essence of it is really about safety, right? Like we all know that. It's all about how safely we can manage our patients along their trajectory. And what paramedics do who are working in this space, they really have to have really quite attuned skills in patient assessment and a really good holistic assessment as well to make those safe clinical risk decisions, clinical risk stratification to kind of go, hey, you know what? Okay, this patient's crook, but they're not crook enough to go to the ED. I can safely manage them via alternate pathways. And that's a real challenge, I guess. And it was really interesting to speak with other reasonably senior clinicians, I suppose. As part of my doctorate, I spoke to other people who work in community paramedicine and in those ECP roles. And most of my participants were intensive care or critical care paramedics. And one of the questions was, well, why are you moving out of that role into more of sort of a primary care focus? And invariably, the answer was like, don't get me wrong, trauma's cool and enjoy that sort of stuff. But then after a while, it becomes a bit formulaic. Air goes in and out, sort of blood goes running around. If it's leaking out, plug it, that sort of stuff, off to hospital. Whereas when you're working out in the community, you're faced with, these undifferentiated patients who might be dying. They're just kind of dying a bit more slowly. And to kind of work out the best way to manage them in the community or, in fact, bouncing them into the ED. Generally, the participants in my research are saying, I like that challenge. It's a different side of my clinical brain and I'm now using. So,
that's really cool. And I guess that's quite a good point too, because at the moment, I guess that workload is so high for the, I guess, the non-urgent, low acuity type patients, which is quite interesting. And having those alternative pathways is really important to understand. So obviously that moves into community paramedicine. And if you can define what that is and what that sort of healthcare model is for our listeners, that'd be great.
Yeah, no, another great question, Alex, because this is a kind of a rapidly evolving paradigm, I suppose, in that you can argue there are two similar yet separate models in community paramedicine. So here in Australia, there's that extended care model, and we've already touched on that. And essentially, the extended care model is the kind of post-000 call dispatch. So someone will pick up the phone and go, oh, yep, I've got a minor lack, or I'm developing some sort of febrile illness or something along those lines, where an ECP will be dispatched. They'll then go to the house, do the assessment, initiate treatment, and refer them off or bounce them into ED. So that's that post-000 model. What's more common in North America is the community paramedic model. And that's kind of like the pre-911 or 000 call, where they have kind of a stronger emphasis in that preventative healthcare space. And also they work more closely with doctors or GPs and people that have oversight for care of these patients. But it's almost like they're an extension of the doctor, I guess, out in the community. So they're going out, they're assessing patients, they're making sure that they're compliant with their meds, they're following their treatment plans, and they're basically picking if there are any red flags that are getting raised, and being able to jump on these issues kind of early before that trajectory heads towards another ED presentation.
That's really interesting. I guess having that, in those communities, I guess you'd have to have very, well, obviously be tailored to their unique needs that they require. So how does that, I guess, benefit, community?
Yeah, another great question, Alex, because the success of any of these models depends on local community needs. So there are examples of community paramedicine programs that are out there that go, hey, that's okay, we know what you need, we're going to bundle in these paramedics and they'll tell you what you need. And those programs invariably fall down. But it's about speaking with the local community, seeing what their needs are, being careful, though, not to replicate the existing healthcare that's there. So when these paramedics come in, they're not nurse practitioners, they're not community nurses. There are paramedics trained in community care. Now, whether there's just an absence of other allied health services there, or they work very closely with the doctors and nurses and community health and other agencies there. But it's all about understanding what the needs of that community actually is. So, yeah, very important.
Yeah, and that's really important, I guess. But if you're talking about it from a perspective of, like you said, like those unique needs, what sort of scope would be, for a community paramedic or that sort of extended role? What sort of scope would they be looking at?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting question because there is no one answer, but you can look at skills, certainly in that primary healthcare space. So there might be things like suturing or primary wound closure, fracture management, management of community-acquired pneumonia or administration of ADT vaccine. Or they might take an educated role to look at the health of the community. So almost from a sort of a public health standpoint as well, to see, well, what's making this community sick? What can we do as a community to make these people better? But it's also, really strongly emphasising that these paramedics still don't operate alone. We're very used to working as autonomous clinicians, I suppose, in paramedicine. And in that way, we're kind of being siloed a bit to kind of go, well, we do our ambulance slash paramedic thing and you guys do your thing and, you know, we'll drop it at the door and then it'll be all good. Whereas the emphasis really is bringing in paramedics and paramedicine into that kind of wider healthcare economy, if you like, to say that, hey, you know, we have a role to play. We have a unique skill set that we can offer the community. And, you know, whether that is things like those skills that I mentioned or, you know, or as simple as just ensuring that, you know, the little old lady down the road who's, you know, 80-odd in the shade can actually get to the pharmacist to make sure that her prescription is filled.
Absolutely. And that's, I guess, a big role too, you know, going out and placements, you know, compared to the first year, the second placement went, that workload was quite larger. And talking to patients, they, you know, when they were going for medications, they didn't realize that, you know, Webster packs were a thing, or, you know, they'd be so sick that they wouldn't be taking their medications daily that they required, like their aspirin, for example, and all of those types of things. And I guess then, how would, say, a community paramedic sort of fit into that role to, like you said, doing, you know, health promotion and education? But would that be, you know, in the sort of, I guess, model that we have now of paramedics going out in ambulances to people's houses, or would it have to be, you know, something similar to things like the blue care nurses and all that type of stuff? Would it be completely different? Like, how would it look?
Yeah, it's an interesting point to bring up, because there's a bit of a blurring, I would suggest, in the lines between a paramedic, so your ordinary, I shouldn't say ordinary, but, you know, your stock standard jurisdictional ambulance paramedic, and that of a community paramedic or extended care paramedic. And I would suggest that ambulance services are moving towards that model of being more a mobile healthcare workforce, where we're going to have quite general skills to be able to apply to the community. And we've kind of seen that with, you know, the skills and the philosophy underlying extended care, for example, is now filtering through the general ambulance population as well. So they're adopting a lot of those ECP practices in the general community, and I think that'll expand a little bit further. And I think that translates to, in the example that you just gave, Alex, about, you know, giving the patient some health literacy as well. So there's definitely an educative component to spend some time with a patient and actually go, well, here are the medications you're on. These are the reasons why you're taking it. These are the reasons why it's important. And maybe look at the reasons why you're not actually taking it. And, you know, there are good examples of, you know, where simple medication management issues can pop up. So an example of in Canada where, I can't remember the exact details, but it was basically, you know, a patient was discharged and told to take two warfarin tablets. And she thought they meant take two tablets every 2 hours or something like that. So she was taking like this massive amount of warfarin, which was only picked up by the community paramedic coming by and just going, where did all the warfarin go? And so being able to capture medication errors like that, if you think of the consequences of being, warfarinized to the extent of that lady, any fall could have been, you know, potentially fatal.
Absolutely. So that's quite interesting, like that role of that community paramedic and how important that could be. So would community paramedicine sort of, I guess, fit better into a rural setting, or is it easily translatable to, you know, a metro area?
Yeah, look, that's a tough one. I'd suggest that community paramedicine models tend to work better in a regional or rural setting, where there isn't the availability of other allied health or other health services there. Now, paramedics, as we know, work anywhere, anytime. And that's why I'd suggest paramedics are well suited to working in these kind of a bit more austere environments, or environments where you don't have the availability of, you know, a major trauma service just down the road, or, you know, access to all these, you know, secondary or tertiary services. So certainly out in rural and regional communities, and And particularly, we see some really great work with Indigenous and First Nation communities, both here in Australia and examples in North America where community paramedicine has worked really well. Now, as an extended care paramedic, I worked in the metro area, and I would suggest that there is still a lot of value in the extended care role, albeit less in that primary healthcare role, but in that preventative care role, but still in that primary healthcare role in a metro area. So, for example, I attended a gentleman that had fallen over with a head lack. Normally, it'd be a transport, ramp to the hospital, clean up and all that sort of stuff. So, the case cycle time would have been a good couple of hours. I had him cleaned up, sutured, ADT administered, and paperwork, done it in an hour as well. So, in that regard, the patient didn't go to hospital. The hospital wasn't, another bed wasn't taken up. And they went fast tracked and all that sort of stuff. We weren't ramped, and the ambulance was available there as well. But another example early on, Alex, if you've got time, that's just always really stuck with me is part of the scope for intensive care paramedics is a catheter change, and I remember early on. We were copying a bit of flack from our colleagues, just kind of going, oh, we're just doing catheters. But no, there's certainly good economic reasons to be able to change a catheter out of hospital and resourcing issues. But for me, the first catheter that I changed was on a 19-year-old lady who had brain mets. She was palliative. As well, she had quite significant neurological deficits from a cancer. And they had called at 10 o'clock at night simply because her catheter had fallen out and just needed reinserting. And they'd done this many a time. The parents were there, and they knew that come along and have to be all packaged up, get on the stretcher, get in the ambulance, go to the hospital, wait in the corridor, etc., you know what I'm talking about, and get back home at 3 in the morning or something. And just the look of gratitude, I said, look, I can just change that view. Just pop out. I can just pop in another catheter at home, and we can certainly follow up with the community nurse just at more convenience. And I just remember that look of, oh, thank goodness, we don't have to do all of that stuff just to get a catheter put in, after hours. So I think there, for me, just on a personal note, that was a value in the extended care model.
Absolutely. Like, not everyone wants to go to hospital. You talk to people and they go, do I really have to go? It's something minor. Like, can I just go to a GP or whatever that may be? And that's really interesting. And I guess too, in the current climate of when I was last on placement was, pretty much everyone went to the ED, and as we know, ramping's like a big issue at the moment. But what are some of the alternative pathways that people can start thinking about, even though community paramedicine isn't, the model that's, undertaken, I guess, in Queensland, but what can people start thinking about for those alternative pathways so that their patients don't just have to go to ED?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'll probably start by just saying, Alex, that the training around community paramedicine and extended care, it's almost all about clinical risk assessment. In other words, patient assessment, those extended, in-depth, sort of long case structure assessments on the patient. So you get the best amount of information available so you can make the safest risk stratification, if you like, on that patient, but also being aware that we've only got a certain amount of tools that we can take to the patient's bedside, and we're seeing things change where we're now doing sort of point of care testing with iStat, with blood chemistry, and that sort of stuff as well. So we're getting a few more toys, but it's also important to understand what our limitations are and where we don't have the information, and therefore we need to bounce them into ED simply because we just don't have the diagnostic ability out there in the community. But what can we do if we decide that the person can be managed safely out of hospital? We can look at a range of options. Sort of primarily, it falls back to the general practitioner. So the GP, as we know, is really at at the heart of the primary healthcare system. So if that's during business hours, we might try to be able to actually speak with the doctor. And most of the time when you ring up and say you're a paramedic, most GPs in my experience will take the time to speak to you, work out a subsequent management plan, organise a subsequent appointment and transport, and that's to make sure you can actually affect the plan and get them in there as well. You might be able to organise direct entry into specialist services as well. So there have been ECP models where, for example, an ECP or a paramedic could speak directly with specialist surgeons. So we actually had a program or an ability to refer to hand specialists, so for hand trauma. So hands are very complicated things. We had set up a pathway where we could speak directly to a consultant who specialised in hands, which was quite valuable. Palliative care is another big area for extended care and community paramedics as well. The value particularly of the community paramedic role is that they actually get to know patients as well over time, because they're there in a preventative health role, more of a sense of a pain management role over the months. Get to know these people, they get to know their healthcare providers, the nursing staff and the in-hospital staff. So having those links as well is really good for a patient, that you're not just running cold as well, and you can speak directly with the people involved too. And any range of other community services that might be of value to the patient. So even things like Meals on Wheels can get referred to. Mental health services can be referred to. Homeless services, DV services. So it's really the paramedic is there as the advocate for the patient, and it's the paramedic that has that understanding of that literacy around what services are available within the healthcare system that can optimise the patient's outcomes. Because, oftentimes, and we all know how confusing the health system is at the best of times, is that at least we've got someone at the point of care that will have an understanding about the healthcare system and how it works, how to get those better outcomes.
Absolutely. And is that what you teach, say, for students undertaking a unit about community paramedicine? Is that what you're teaching in terms of being aware of the different services that are out there and how to access them to, better advocate for your patient?
Yeah, I'd like to teach it more, right, I guess, Alex. It's difficult because probably going back to the statement of saying, paramedicine is evolving and it's difficult to define what we do as a profession and where we need to kind of put a bit more time into it. So paramedic degrees are pretty chockers, full of really good stuff. And I kind of sometimes I feel like I have to explain to my students, we all at some point, what are we learning this for? And I feel like going, there's a reason, we've got so little time to put stuff in that everything that we do put in is important. And I want to put in more stuff, but then it'll turn into a four-year degree. So, certainly what we're trying to do here at USQ is embed more of those community paramedicine principles throughout the curriculum. And for our students to really think about that, you're not going to be working just for a jurisdictional ambulance service in a metro area where you can take someone to a tertiary service. It's really thinking about, you might be in a regional or remote location working in some sort of private sector capacity as well, where you have to make decisions about whether you activate RFDS at the cost of X number of $1,000s or travel by a helicopter or whatever, what other options are available for your patients. So, it's challenging, but kind of watch this space. And I would suggest, though, just looking at what ambulance services in general are doing, they're looking more at healthcare outcomes for certainly people with chronic and complex healthcare problems, which is by far the majority of our work and cost the health budget billions. And I think our education in that space is probably a little lacking at the moment, but we're filming it.
Absolutely. And, you know, like I was reading some of the research papers that are out there about this topic, and you know, there's quite a few out there, and particularly in that, you know, Canada sort of USA sort of jurisdiction, they do, like you said, it's a model that they utilize. So there's a lot of research about it. But are there any sort of research trials that are happening here in Queensland and in, you know, across the nation to try and, you know, see if this will be something that we will do in the future as paramedics?
Yeah, so there's, I guess there's always new research coming out in this space. So I suppose, literature came out in sort of late 90s, sort of mid-late 90s around extended care, mainly out of the UK. And really from sort of 2005 onwards, I'd suggest that the literature has really ramped up. The number of studies have ramped up as well. So there are studies that are always ongoing in some way, shape, or form in this space. Nothing that I'm aware of at the moment that's a really big trial or a big evaluation going on in Australia. But that's not to say that they're not going on. I just haven't seen any out there at the moment. But I wouldn't be surprised there's you know other PhD students certainly who are working in this space and. So basically let's just see what comes out.
What does the future of paramedicine look like, you know, in 10, 15, 20 years time, considering now we're, you know, a registered profession and, you know, research is now becoming more discipline focused as well?
So that's a $64,000 question, isn't it? Where is paramedicine going? What do paramedics actually do? Where are they going to be working? It's a really interesting question because certainly the ambulance service that I knew when I started my career is just a pale shadow of what the ambulance services are these days. So, you know, the paramedic in 20 years' time, it's really interesting because this topic pops up from time to time at various conferences and stuff like that. It's always fascinating to listen to what people's opinions are. And look, my feeling is that paramedics are going to be more generalised healthcare providers, or be a bit more of a generalist in a healthcare sense. I think we're going to have a better understanding of care for the elderly population and people with complex and chronic health care needs and how we'll manage those. I think we'll never lose our core job of treating the acutely injured or sick and certainly and transport. But I think that we're going to see a lot more paramedics working in the private sector now, and that's where I'm really interested in finding out what this cohort of paramedics will actually be doing. And I think the education that they currently get in curriculums across Australia and New Zealand, UK and places like that could be more fine-tuned to paramedics working in the private sector in a primary healthcare role. And who knows, look, that might become a specialisation. You know, you do your basic package as a paramedic and then you specialise in either acute care or extended care, and some of those models already exist, or, you know, maybe you might flip it and sort of say, okay, we'll give you a more of a generalist degree and then you can specialise then in your acute care sort of stuff and stuff that we're doing in undergrad. So, the profession's evolving rapidly. We'll adapt as it changes.
That's really exciting. It'd be really cool to see where it all goes. Now, quick question as well. So, you know, we've talked about community paramedicine being, you know, a new healthcare model that could potentially become part of, you know, the pre-hospital world for Australia. But how can students and graduates sort of start understanding this more now and start implementing things like health promotion and education, that type of stuff, just in their everyday practice?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I suppose it's just it's asking yourself when you are out on crack or you are out on the road, what else can we actually do for this patient? Because I often feel that sometimes there's this sense of, oh, why did I get called, or why am I here? And when you start digging down, often it is an issue that the patient is just, either just plain scared, or they just have a poor understanding about healthcare, their literacy around healthcare, and what to do in a particular situation. So certainly if you've been confronted with a patient just kind of going, well, why are you wasting our time? Just ask yourself those sort of questions. Go, okay, well, what are the gaps there? What are the gaps in their knowledge? What prompted them to call? You know, is it that they needed to have more regular contact with their GP, or do they need to be provided with a bit more information about what their problem is and how it can be better managed other than going through an emergency department? But really understanding and making that assessment of, is this a minor issue? Is this a minor problem? Is this a problem that can wait till a little bit later down the track? And that's the real challenge I find working in this space is really just trying to pick those people that can be managed safely out in the community. So, yeah, I guess that'd be my number one piece of advice, is that if you're ever kind of getting that sense of, oh, why am I here? Start asking yourself genuinely, okay, why did they call? What is missing here? What do they need to know? What else is it about their presentation that maybe they're seeing that I'm not seeing? And take it from there.
One of our previous episodes, we talked to Jo Stevenson, she mentioned, you know, being curious is such an important component to the job, in terms of, you know, if you go to a patient and you're like, oh, you know, I don't know, they stub their toe, like that's the cliche case that gets thrown around. But what else is going on? Like, dig deeper in terms of, you know, is there a DV? Is that why they're calling? Is it, you know, something else going on? Underlying condition, or, you know, social factors that are playing a role that, you know, that person does need access to care, or just needs your help. But being curious is a really important part of that. I thought that was a really good point that you made. It sort of marries up.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I listened to Joe's podcast, which was an awesome interview. So I just want to say a quick hi to Joe. I really enjoyed the podcast. Podcast, so I guess it's nice that we're on the same sort of page. But I also got to say, Alex, don't get me wrong, like there are some people that genuinely waste your time there as well. So don't get me wrong, they're out there as well.
Is there any other sort of points that you'd like to make about community paramedicine and that model of healthcare that you haven't mentioned, or that you'd really like to express to students listening to this or grads listening to this?
Yeah, no, sure, thanks. I guess it's just to say that if you're seeing people work in that community paramedicine space or extended care role, and they might not be doing the kind of higher acuity stuff, it's not a step back in your career. In fact, it like I was saying, you know, in my research, where I interviewed a New York City paramedic who had moved to Canada. He'd been in the job 20 odd years, do two or three shifts without, you know, the big traumas and gunshots and all that sort of stuff. And, worked on the helicopters and, you know, all really cool stuff. And, you know, that's really cool stuff going through it. But it was interesting for him to say, look, you know, you get to the point where you kind of go, yeah, that's cool, but I'm ready to be challenged in other ways. And I think if you're going to move into that sort of primary healthcare role, it is challenging. It is kind of a little bit scary in a way that you're working without a net in some regards, and that, like I'm saying, you only got a certain amount of diagnostic equipment and just kind of what's between your ears to work out, hey, is this person going to be okay if I leave them at home? And without fail, almost every extended care paramedic that I've spoken to have had one of those nights where they've knocked off their shift, they've gone home, and then they're lying in bed looking at the ceiling going, oh my gosh, did I do the right thing leaving that person at home? Whereas often I find, you know, working under a traditional model, you know, it's like, if they're sick, you take them to hospital, you know, no worries, it's all done. Or You leave them at home because you're dead set certain that they're not dying there, and you're reasonably confident. But when you're working in that kind of nether region, it's a little bit scary sometimes, but challenging as well. And I think for us as a profession to move in that primary healthcare space and to look at alternate treatment pathways, it just kind of says, hey, you know what, paramedics, we are actually capable of doing this stuff. It's not just exclusively the domain of nurses and doctors. We're well capable. Yeah.
Awesome. I love that. And so I guess I'll go through the final three questions. You've probably heard them before if you listened to Joe's episode, but we ask every paramedic on the show these questions. So the first one is, what is one piece of advice that you'd give to a student?
Oh, it is a good question. Well, I'll repeat the one piece of advice that was given to me as a paramedic or trainee ambulance officer back in the day, because I was getting really stressed about not doing things quite right or things not working as fast as I wanted. And a very senior specialist operations paramedic that was working the road for one day, and I'm very fortunate to be teamed up with him. He just said, Dave, just relax and enjoy the job. And as easy as that sounds, it's actually quite difficult to do. But for me, it was just a reminder of, you know, I joined this job for a reason and I should be enjoying it. So stop stressing so much that everything's not falling in place today. It will happen. So just take some time to relax and actually enjoy what you're doing.
That's amazing. That's a great piece of advice. I love that one. Try to keep remembering that one in grad year.
Definitely. That's when it comes in most handy.
Awesome. The second question is, what is your biggest mistake that's resulted in your greatest learning?
My biggest mistake. that's a tough one. I guess I don't know if I've had a biggest mistake. I've had lots and lots and lots of mistakes along the way. And I think I think what's been important, though, is that we as paramedics, and this is just a cultural thing, I think, in our profession, we are really, really hard on ourselves when we get something wrong. And I've not so much missed a diagnosis, but I had a delayed diagnosis on a patient that was going down a particular pathway when I should have taken another pathway. And in retrospect, it's going, oh, look, the signs were there and I missed it. And I was really hard on myself. And there's this kind of feeling out there that you're only as good as your last job as well, which is crap. It really is crap. So I guess just take any mistake in inverted commas and just use it as a positive learning experience and not to be so hard on yourself. We all make mistakes. And if you just use it as an opportunity to learn, then, you know, there's a silver lining to it.
Awesome. That's a great piece of advice. Now, the last one is, what did you used to believe to be true that you no longer believe to be true?
What, in paramedic land or just in general?
Oh, I mean, it's up to you, whatever you like.
Well, I believed in Santa until I was about 12, I think. So that was a bit devastating. in paramedic land, I think it was you're bulletproof, I suppose, and that's just not the case. There are times where it does get tough and you can put on a very strong face, I suppose, and put up your shields. We're all kind of can get bits of us just chipped away week after week, whether it's just shift work or that big job or that horrible job or just the people that you work with or whatever. And it's just a reminder, I suppose, just to say, you know what? We're all human, we're all fallible, and there are times when you just need to go, hey, dude, I just need to step back and just catch my breath for a moment and then jump back in. So just be kind to yourself and look after yourself and look after others, and hopefully you'll be okay.
Awesome. Thank you so much for, you know, sharing your wisdom today and your knowledge and your passion about community paramedicine as well. So that's been really cool to, you know, talk about and yeah, consider for the future. So that's been quite awesome. Thank you so much.
Oh, great to be along, Alex. Thanks very much for having me along.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. You can connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or you can email us at thestudentparamedicpodcast@gmail.com.